movement where there is no achievement. It's a perennial movement, no destination. No destination. You come to the point of departure, then you begin all again, you walk around in circles and circles. This is circular movement. And according to Rami explains, I mean, the circular movement of the heavenly bodies, of the star, they are attracted by the love of God, by the Almighty. According to Rami, they are endowed with intelligence, with the heavenly bodies. And they want to come as close to the Almighty as possible. But they fail, they always fail. So if you fail, you always start all over again from the point of departure. And that's what Meshi says. There was no purpose, no meaning, I mean, there was no destination. We just circled around, encompassed the mount, circled. Yomim Rabin, Yomim Asher Alach, the Mekodesh Banei HaMeshes, was not just a few days. You know, in biblical Hebrew, yomim means years. Vayomim asher alachnu mikodesh baneya ad asher avarnu nachol zoret shloishim ushmeine. We have nothing, have accomplished nothing. We gained nothing. We just moved. Atim kol adei ran sheyam ochom bekerav amachne v'gam yad ad Hashem, this is something new with you. Roisobom lehumom mikodesh. The divine hand has helped to eliminate them as quickly as possible from the camp. It is the year, it was the year of fest upon him in complete alienation of men from God. No prayer was accepted. No communication reached man. The heavens were insensitive and the world mute. And God very far. And now beautifully did Chazal say, in portraying this dark and dreary night of loneliness, even Moshe Rabbeinu lost his contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with Almighty. It was a silent night, not only bleak night, a silent night. The Medrash, and the Medrash tells us something, huh? You mean you refer to that? No. The Medrash tells us a very strange story. Tesis quotes the Medrash, a very strange story. Tesis in Tainis. Kol Tes Be'ov O'yeisim Kifreyev. The whole congregation, very strange, the whole congregation of 600,000 people, it's difficult to imagine, used to dig graves for themselves. The Sheikhim B'Seichom, and every Tisha B'Av, they used, the whole congregation used to descend into the graves, then lie down. When the mocha and the maro, akruz yeitze, the voice used to announce, ibodlu achayim min hameisim, let the living separate themselves from the dead. What did Chazal express by that horrible, by painting that horrible picture? What? In other words, every Tisha B'Av, actually, the whole congregation died. They used to die every year. Some were restored to life. But the rest used to be restored in the morning. But they used to die. It was repetitious death. You see, about death, people say at least it has one positive feature. You don't die twice. But in the Midbar, they died 38 times like that. That's what Chazal wanted to describe. In other words, every Tisha B'Av of multitudes would die. Many, all of them were ready to die. Life was not, life was not different from death. It was a life without hope, a life without anticipation, without a future. The life was death. No one dreamt, no one prayed for fulfillment. Everybody knew that he'll end up in one of those ditches. People did not understand God's ways. When fast upon him, it's awfully hard to understand God's ways. We know that from our own experience. In spite of all the courses and all the drushes about Holocaust, it's very hard to understand. They were perplexed and frightened The whole existence was irrational, absurd. Everyone used to dig his own grave, lie down in the ditch, waiting for the end. Whether the end came the next morning or the end came a year later, didn't matter. But it was to live in order to die. This is how the Mesh himself portrays the mood of that Dor HaMidbar. Isn't this 38-year-long period one of the most enigmatic, paradoxical eras in Jewish history? It was a period dedicated to death, to annihilation. It was a new time. Man was completely separated from God. Not even the greatest of all men could communicate with him. The whole community waited for the Almighty for the Almighty's intervention in His redeeming grace, for the Vihizo Atoer Alatomei. And this vigil lasted how long? 38 years. Then the 40th year, suddenly HaKadosh Baruch engaged in Azoya, in sprinkling water upon all those who were Mei Meisim, who wasn't a Tomemeh. And that's how the Parsha Pora Adumo spans the gap, separating the last words in Kerach from the Vatove Kol Eido Eido Ashremo. Kulam L'chaim. It was the 40th year Kulam L'chaim. For 38 years there was no Chaim. Isn't the Parsha Pora Adumo the proper bridge which spans the mysterious river flowing into nowhere, into nihility and oblivion? The Torah concludes narrating the laws of Chale and Trumas HaMaaseres in Kerach, announcing ipsa facto. It's very interesting. In Chale, Rashi says, the Medrash says it, in Trumas HaMaaseres, Vayishlach, the Torah began to speak about Chale right after the Meraglim was sent us to die in the Midbar, and the whole generation, the Torah said, Ksovei Ola Oretz, Vachalte, Vayi Vachochem Lechem Oretz, and then in Kerah, the Torah speaks about Trumas HaMaaseres. So Chazal say, in order to assure the Jew, no matter how long the delays, but they'll finally come into Eretz Yisrael, and they'll enjoy its produce and its fruit, in its fruit. So the Torah was narrating the laws of Chale and Trumas HaMaaseres, announcing ipsa facto that no matter how long the delay, the promised land will finally be theirs. And suddenly, I tried to dramatize it, and suddenly the Torah interrupts the dialogue with Aaron and Moses, bids them farewell, and tells Moses, or Aaron what, we'll resume this dialogue. You know when? In 38 years from now. Now the sun is about to set. 38 years, a long night of 38 years. You have to spend without communication with me, without giving you any new laws, without making any promises. It could be just a horrible night of not of existence, but of non-existence. I've rest upon it. This period will be known as the Chukas HaTorah, when man surrenders his rationality, suspends his judgment to the Almighty. Only at the end of that period, when the congregation will stop digging the graves, the conversation will be picked up and will continue. And the symbol of that is Chukas HaTorah. It symbolizes and it's indicative of the mood of that Eich. Is there a more dramatic story of the 38 years Hestaponim period than the Parsha story with its face at Erodam Kiyamuzbeer? What did the Jews do during the 38 years? They're just digging graves and dying. Now let us come to the parsha. If death per se is not a nauseating experience, a grisly experience, which perplexes man, the death of an individual for the sake of atonement of others for someone else is the most unintelligible experience. And here we come to miss yourself, to miss this nation. If death per se of any individual is a grisly experience, is the death of an individual, not because he was guilty of anything, or because he sinned, but as the representative of a group which was guilty, as is certainly an incomprehensible and non-rational experience. And here we come back to the problem of Mrs. Meshia. It's one of the most dramatic, the most tragic chapters of Meshia. Why did Moshe die? He was the chosen, who was chosen to be the Redeemer, who sacrificed his private life for the people, who loved so much the people, and who was the Mekabel HaTorah, the context of which is concerned not with life, not in the desert, but in the promised land. Why did he die? Just a moment. Why didn't he live to see that land? Know the answer to me? Yeah, good, I'll come to Malchem, but no, let me just develop that. How eager Moshe was to see the land, we can imagine. He himself admitted it. ושכנן על השם באיש אלימר, עד השם אליקים, עד החלסו, לארץ הסבתכו, אז גודלכו, אסיותכו, חזקו, אפרונו והרס, הור הטבע, ובנן. It's saturated with so much passion, so much love, with so much nostalgia. And the Rebbeinu Shlom not only did not fulfill his request, his petition, he forbade the repetition of the prayer. He must not even pray. Such a right isn't being taken away from anyone yet. But however it was taken away from Moses, from the great Moshe. Vayisaber Hashem bi, vayimer elai, rav lo, chal teshev daber elai, badover hazeh, and the Eternal was incensed against me, and he said to me, let it suffice. Do you continue now to speak unto me of this matter, of this thing, anymore? Of course, Moshe's death is certainly Zeis HaTero Odom Kiyom Uzbeir. Of course, it is the strangest of all chukos. It is humanly impossible to grasp the secret or the rationality of Moses' death. Death in general and Moses' death in particular belong into the Zeis Chukos HaTero or Zeis HaTero Odom Kiyom Uzbeir. Let me elaborate it, what the enigmatic and tragic aspect consists of. No matter what reason for Moshe's death, what the reason for Moshe's death was, one basic truth stands out. No matter what the reason was, we have actually 10, the Reira Chai encountered 10 theories, all right?
Yes.
No matter what the reason is, one thing, basic truth, stands out. Namely, Moshe died not for his sake, but on account of the Bnei Yisrael. The Torah emphasized this verity a few times. גם בי סנף אל השם בגללכם, ועם הגמטו לסובי שמו, and the eternal was wrath with me for your sake, thou shalt not go in thither. ויסבר עד השם בי למענכם, before is בגללכם, now is למענכם, and God was incensed against me for your sake, and even David in Tehillim says, ויקציפו על מי מריבו, וירא למי שבעבורון, and they provoked him at the waters of Meribah, and he injured Moses on their account. Even David says in Tehillim. What is the meaning of Biglalchen? Let's understand. What does it mean, Biglalchen? Or Lemanchen? Or Bavuchen? In what regard were the people responsible for Moses' head? Whatever the head was, why was not Moses responsible? You cannot say because Moses was under pressure, because people were excited, and Moses got angry. For all that, Moses is responsible, not the people. In what regard were the people responsible? Why? Will you let me go ahead with this? Why? In what regard were the people responsible? What was it? If the head consisted, let us say Rashi's pshat is the correct one, the head consisted in hitting the rock instead of addressing a few words to it, why should the Nisrael be blamed? Because Nisrael were pressing? This is no extenuating circumstance for anyone, particularly not for the great Moses. Moses was responsible for the deed. The same question applies to the other theories concerning the nature of Moses' guilt. I believe that in studying the Parshias in Devarim, and in Bamidbar, dealing with the last moments of Moshe's life, we are confronted with the most touching tragedy. What is it? What was the great tragedy of Moses? Not the non-entry into Israel. This was a result of it. But there was one tragedy which Moshe experienced. The tragedy of the teacher who is too great for his disciples. This is the tragedy of the master who is too exalted for his generation to be understood. The tragedy of the Rebbe with his boundless knowledge and unlimited sweep and depth, this great emotional warmth who is not understood by his contemporaries. Who don't simply refuse to open up to the Rebbe. Of course, there were Yeshua, there was Yeshua. There was Elazar. There was Pinchas. They received the Torah from Moses, carried on Moses' tradition and reflected the glory and majesty of Moses. The Chazal say, a rabbi spoke, Atne Meshik, Atne Chamo, Atne Yeshua, Atne Lerono, and all the Hashonim interpreted the Maimah very well. Moses' countenance radiated its own light, Yeshua's only the reflected light, because like the moon reflect the light of the sun, so did Yeshua reflect the light of Moses. However, Moses was the teacher par excellence of the entire generation, of the entire nation, which he delivered from bondage, and particularly of this generation, which grew up in the desert under Moses' supervision, care and tutelage. Why did not the whole nation behave with dignity? Why only Yeshua is a Talmid Moshe? Why only Pinchas? Why only Eleazar? Three Talmidim of it. Why not the entire congregation as such should have been the disciple of Moses? And had he been the disciple of Moses, so why didn't they behave with dignity, humility, discipline, and perseverance in times of distress. For instance, when there is a famine, or means there is thirst, we don't have water. Oh, if they had been the disciples of Moses, the entire congregation, why didn't they behave with firmness and heroic resistance and determination vis-à-vis temptation and aroused desire in Shittim, when the lascivious daughters of Naoth have seduced the people as such? When the people succumbed in the first year, in the second year, when the people succumbed to the evil, to the Erevra, and made the golden calf, Moshe argued, and he argued with Rai, Lomo yechre atcho ve'amecho asher eliso me'eretz Mitzrayim. Why should thy wrath be incensed against thy people which you took out of Egypt? What do you expect them to do, as Chazal interpreted? Their background is pagan. They have not been re-educated and retrained in practicing morality of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. It takes time, Moses argued, to reform them and to rehabilitate the people, to teach them new morals and new virtues. What do you expect them to act? They are lonely, they are frightened, so they made a god, they made an idol. And it was indeed a sound and solid defense. The generation of Yetzer Mitzrayim could not be considered as the disciples of Moses. That's why Moses was never discouraged. Whenever the congregation acted not in accordance with Moses' morality, because they were not his Talmidim, they were not his disciples. However, at Nei Meriva was a different story. And in Shittim, a different story. Another generation sinned. Not the generation of Yetzer Mitzrayim. The generation of Boi Oretz succumbed to temptation. The generation of Boi Oretz, who were panicked into rebellion. The people who were brought up by whom? By Moses. They spoke suddenly the same language which their fathers used 40 years ago in Rephidim or in Midbar Sinai. Lomo elisunu meretz Mitzrayim, lo elisunu lamokim aroa ze. Maybe she didn't believe his eyes, his ears. Who is saying it? What is he hear? This, what is memory, or it is fact? It's reality. If it's reality, I mean, so I failed. If I couldn't implant in there that restraining power and that discipline and that faith and that firmness, so what did I accomplish? We forget that the Rephidim episode took place 40 years ago, before. We are under an impression as if nothing had happened between then and now. Why should Moses' disciples speak the language of liberated slaves who just started with the path of flesh? And that's why we find in Shittim we come across a very strange phenomenon, that Moshe was crying. You ever heard Moshe crying? Did Moshe cry during his negotiations with the Kodesh Baruch about the Ego? Did he cry even at the time when the Meraglim betrayed the people? He never cried. Moshe was never discouraged. And in Shittim, Vayoves HaMedyonis, Lifnei Moshe, Lifnei Edo, Vayeshvim Pesach Eil Mei, Bechim Pesach Eil Mei. Why did Moshe cry now? Why didn't he cry during the Egel episode? You know what the answer is? In the Egel episode, he understood and could argue and could defend. There was an excellent defense attorney. Roma, and now, he's permitting those people. Apparently, those people were not his permitting, who made sure hopes and expected to raise. Why? Why should the greatest of all teachers fail in that central mission? Of course, you know what the answer is. More as I said, Moses did not fail. Yashgoche ordained it. Moshe was too great for the generation. He rose high above them. His vision was too penetrating. His depth, superhuman. His sweep too high. They simply could not follow him. They failed to understand him. That's what Moshe emphasized. Lemarchem, Biglochem, Bavuchem. Because of you, had you understood and appreciated the teachings which I offered you, had you understood and appreciated the teachings which I offered, the hours of instruction I gave you, over a period of 40 years, nothing of that sort would have happened, and Moses would have been admitted to the promised land. There was no need for the Meriva. For slaves, the shortage of water immediately precipitates rebellion. But for Mamlechus Kenan and Kodesh, it's no mitigating circumstance. The central thought underlying all theories about Moses' death revolves about the Biglochem. The guilt belongs to the people. And the guilt consisted not in asking for water, not even in succumbing to temptation. The guilt consisted in what? In not becoming nation's disciples. In not opening up to Moshe, to Moshe's influence. In resisting Moshe, Moshe's redemptive and cathartic power and resisting. Basically, a person should succumb to great power, spiritual power. If he doesn't, it's an act of resistance on his part. In that will, not being willing to become Moshe's family. Of course, the one to suffer the consequences was Moshe. Why? The Halacha stated long ago, if the student was sentenced to be exiled to a city of refuge, his teacher goes with him into exile. Is it just? Is it unjust?
Yes.
But it's a law. Because the people did not become his disciples and they sinned, Moshe went into exile with them. He died in the sand dunes of the Moab mountains. Because the Bnei Israel sinned, because they closed their minds and hearts to Moshe's teaching and to the richness of his personality, because of that, Moses was found guilty and he was punished. This is the great chukra in his death. Again, we are confronted with the Vesa Teiro Odom Kiyomus Be'el, with the unintelligibility of death, of the greatest of all persons, who did not to die without sin. It's more of a mystery than to die with sin. The mystery of death of a human being who was deserving to go on living forever. It is the death of a man who was the greatest of all men. He was the man par excellence who should have attained immortality. And he died. Moses' failure to cross the Jordan complicated matters, not only for himself, for him. Complicated matters and caused a tragic change in our historical destiny in general. Had Moses entered the land, the whole history of our people would have taken another turn. That's what everybody says. It would have been less tragic, because our history is major. Enter the land, less sad, less mysterious, and more understandable. Of course, it would also have been less heroic, and consequently less great. If the Bnei Yisrael had proven themselves worthy of communing with Moshe, of being his disciples, if they had had the receptive intellectual and emotional capacity to absorb Teras Moshe, then Moshe would have entered and conquered the promised land, not Joshua. Then Moshe would have been anointed as what? As a Melech HaMashiach. I said it to Rabbi Kledis. I mentioned Rabbi Kledis' reception. The Melech HaMashiach. And if Moshe had been crowned as a Melech HaMashiach, Jewish history would have found its realization and fulfillment immediately upon entering the land. There was no reason, basically, to deny the messianic role to Moshe. And I'll tell you why. Moshe was the greatest of all men. His personality was greater than that of the Melech HaMashiach. Because this is a part of the Nimamin, Shilvuas Meshra, Abin Ola, Shalom, Oysa, Amiti, Av, Lanzim, Akeidim, Ola, Boi Nachor. Among the Boi Nachor is the Melech HaMashiach. So Meshra is superior to the Melech HaMashiach. Interesting is also the Rambam, in Yichas Tshuve. He says about the Melech HaMashiach, the Tir Bechachmosi Yisra Meshleime, that as far as the wisdom is concerned, he'll surpass Shleime. But the Yekore is Benvuasei, with Moshe Rabbeinu, but as far as prophecy is concerned, he will be just close to Moshe, but Moshe will surpass him. So no one. The other thing is also the Rambam, in Yichas Tshuve. He says about the Melech HaMashiach, the Tir Bechachmosi Yisra Meshleime, that as far as the wisdom is concerned, he will surpass Shleime, but the Yekore is Benvuasei, with Moshe Rabbeinu, but as far as prophecy is concerned, he will be just close to Moshe, but Moshe will surpass him. So no one in the past and the future has transcended, no one in the future will transcend the great Moshe. He's the greatest of all men. If he's the greatest of all men, so he's supposed to be crowned the Melech HaMashiach. Who is the Melech HaMashiach? The chosen among all men. If so, if Moshe had been crowned as the Melech HaMashiach, the question rises. No, if so, means that Moshe was qualified to be the Melech HaMashiach. The question rises, why did the Hashgacha separate Moshe from the Melech HaMashiach? Why did not the Almighty ordain Moshe as the King Messiah? No one else will ever be as qualified as Moshe was. Then, of course, as Moshe being crowned Melech HaMashiach, is like Chassidim say, but then as Mashiach at Kinen, Chassidim Masach, Misnag Mafaik. You know the song. Then the Messianic era, please. Then the Messianic era would have commenced immediately with Moses' entry into Eretz Yisrael. The land would have been endowed with the Kedusha, with the legions of Babylon. Could have never destroyed. While the Kedusha Yeshua were passed from Kitchel Eshaito, the late Kitchel Azelore, if Moshe had been the leader of the Bnei Yisrael, if he had entered Eretz Yisrael, then Kedusha Moshe would have been a continuous, eternal Kedusha, Kitchel Eshaito, the Kitchel Azelore. The answer is obvious. The Messianic era would have commenced, indeed. It was not Moshe's fault. Moshe was ready and qualified. But Messianic era does not depend only upon the readiness of the Melech HaMashiach. Messianic era, the beginning of the era, depends 90% upon the readiness of the people. If the entire generation or the entire nation had accepted the message, Moses' message fully, if his teachings had had the genuine impact upon the contemporaries, if they had become his disciples, if they had treated Moshe with reverence and love the way a Talmid is supposed to treat his Rebbe, then Moses would have been ordained as the Melech HaMashiach indeed. If the entire Ummah Yisraelit, the entire congregation, had been the carrier of the great message of Torah from Sinai, if the people had been worthy disciples of Moshe, of the great master, the latter would have been anointed as the King Messiah, and they would have become the generation of Messiah. It's a schus to be the day Rishon Melech HaMashiach. Unfortunately, we had not risen to the great singular occasion, for that Moshe was in possession of a few, the crowd acted like liberated slaves who could not forget the path of flesh after the passage of 40 years. The era of Melech HaMashiach couldn't have begun. The era of the Messiah was postponed and postponed for a long time. The distance between Gula's Meshe and Gula's HaMashiach grew almost ad infinitum. Moshe had to die in the sand dunes of Moab. His teachings were entrusted to Joshua, to the people, to countless future generations. When the entire congregation will commit itself to his teaching, when Moshe will be accepted as a teacher by the entire Ummah Yisraelis, when all will demonstrate their capability and readiness to become inquisitive disciples of our master and teacher, then and only then the hour of Gula will strike, but not before. In the meantime, in the Meimei River, Yisrael was assigned the new job, namely, first of all, conquest of the land under Joshua, but the job of waiting. Wait for whom? And for what? And of course, you understand very well. Of course, for the Messiah, whom we lost. The Messiah could have led us across the Jordan into the promised land 3,500 years ago, before Kissinger and Nixon. An opportunity lost, the hour passed. We'll return, but not too soon. Again the great mystery, of death emerges. Moshe dies because his contemporaries did not recognize his greatness and moral perfection. And because of his untimely death, Jewish history took a different turn, became more complex, more unintelligible, and more tragic. And this case, where Odom who died there, was the greatest of all men. Meshe. And the consequences we suffer, the period of Melech HaMashiach is being postponed for several days, but Yom HaKshorah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's very long day. Now let me finish. The sequence of events as narrated in Parsha Chukat is as follows. First, the Eide arrived in Midbatim. I'm trying to enumerate them. In Midbatim, someone died. Who died? Miriam. She was a prophetess of Gula. This dark little girl who watched the floating ark, and because of her, Moshe was saved. That little girl died. The girl with faith and hope in her little brother died. Strange story. Then the Torah narrates the story of May Meriva. Right in the middle. The word of the narrative. Moses' error, whatever the error consisted of, and the divine oath that neither Moses nor Aaron who will bring the assembly into the promised land. It would have been quite understandable if the Torah had told and asked immediately about Aaron's death. Immediately. Following Gilmer's death, then the episode at Main River, whatever the episode consisted of, and the Almighty's oath that none of them will enter the land, and then the fulfillment, the execution of the Almighty's oath, namely that Aaron already died in the land. No, it's very strange. If you have the Chumash, take a look. Very strange. Instead, in such a case, the continuity would have been preserved. Instead, the Torah interrupts the story of May Meriva and relates us another event, namely the refusal of the king of Edom to let the Israelites cross his country and the fact that the Bnei Israel turned away from him. Several questions arise here. First, why did not the Torah tell us about it later? When she told us in the context of Sichon Ve'ik, when she told us about a similar refusal by Sichon to allow the Israelites to pass through his territory, or about Ve'ik, the king of Bashan, who refused to allow the Jews to cross his territory and declared war upon them. Edom would have been the proper context, not about Edom, who refused the pay, passage, who refused to allow passage, through his territory to the Bnei Israel, would have been within the proper frame of reference. Second, there's another question arises. When Sichon and Og refused to cooperate, Moses declared war and crushed them. Correct? However, yet Edom was not touched. Once the king categorically declined their request, they changed their route and they compassed the Mount Seir many days until the people felt exhausted and discouraged because of the steady circling around the land of Edom. And then the story episode of the snake, of the venomous snake, took place. Edom, the question is simple. Edom was a small kingdom. Sichon Ve'ik, the way Moshe Rabbeinu portrayed them later in the Dvarim, were mighty kingdoms. People, giant people. Why were they tolerant toward Edom and very firm vis-a-vis more powerful kingdoms? From a strategic viewpoint, they should have acted differently than us. Well, what is the answer? Of course, the answer we find not in Bamidbar. Bamidbar, we don't know anything. But in Deuteronomy, in the Torah, the Almighty gave direct instructions not to touch the territory and political integrity of Edom. The Sorot of Lemel, after measuring the Gvul Achechem Bnei Esau, Hayeshim Beseir, V'yiru Mikem, V'nishmartem Ehi, Altis Gogobon, שלראתם לכם מארצם מדרכת רוגל, כי ירושה ללייסוף נסעתי את הר סיר. In other words, what does it mean? What does it mean? That no Jew, not even Moshe, had a right to set his foot on what? On Edom's territory. And they turned away from Edom and they had to circle Edom for a long time until they got tired and fatigued and exhausted of circling. Is it true that no Jew must set a foot on the territory of Edom?
No.
Is it true?
No.
Permanently true?
No.
Certainly not. We are told that the Achris Hayomim, at the end of days, the Olu Mishim Ba'atziyin Lishtet Esareso, that the Savior from the Mount of Zion will go up to judge the Mount of Esau. And Chazal says, and Esau offered When Esau offered hospitality, was very hospitable with Jacob, and so Jacob said, this is he's slowly marching and moving because of the children. And Adovei Aladeni Zeiro. So the member says, Chazano Akolam Mikro, we are searching. When did Jacob visit Esau in Har Seir? He never paid him a visit. So how could Jacob, Rachman Islam, lie? No, he didn't lie. A time will come when Jacob will pay a visit to Esau. Shnema Avol Mishim Batsi Lishki Besar Esau. However, only then, Moshiach, not Meshim. Only then, not prior to the appearance of the Messiah. Edom is the symbol. What is Edom? Edom in Chazal. It's in the Amalek. It's a symbol of hostility displayed by many non-Jews toward the Jews. Edom is the antagonist. Sorry, Shaladim. Engage Jacob in a wrestle in that dark and dreary night. He was very persistent, that antagonist. Edom is the symbolic antagonist of Yaakov. Whenever a Jew, Edom is the opposition with the Jew encounters every time he quests for freedom, for self-expression. Edom is the mysterious fiend making the life of the Jew difficult. Yes. Moses was instructed by God to die in the desert. Once Moses lost the majestic messianic crowd, Edom's territory became sacred, inviolable, and the integrity could not be affected, since Edom or Amalek must exist and will exist as long as the Messiah has not arrived. As long as the hope for the Messiah and the vision of the Messiah has not been fulfilled. Once the Almighty told Moses, Lochen leisavil, esakol azeh aloret asher nesati lachem, the Messianic era, once the Messianic era became a distant hope, thousands of years away, Edom was provided with security. Had Moses become the Melech HaMashiach, then Moses would have crossed the territory of Edom through the Jordan into Israel, then the Gula would have been completed. Moses lost the battle. Lochen leisavil esakol azeh aloret asher nesati lachem. So the Torah tells us right away, in one breath, Vayishlach meishem alochim el Edom melech melech Edom leimeach. After your doctor is called out, Lord, Hebron of the heart. He realized right away, that Edom will refuse and will have to turn away. The Messianic era became a distant hope. During this said interim period, Edom is the ruler and king. And Israel must not touch Edom or engage him in battle. Had the Jews acted differently at the main river, Moshe would have risen to the Messianic kingship, and Edom would have been conquered and destroyed. The Roman Mishim Ba'atzi Sarisov would have been fulfilled approximately 3,500 years ago. That's why the Torah narrated the story of Edom's refusal and Israel's obedience to Edom's desire right after Main River. Moshe lost the crown, we lost the Melech HaMashiach. And that is Eitzchuk HaKatero, Adam Kiyom Zbayar.